Welcome to the midweek Mission Ridge podcast known as Footnotes. Footnotes is here to give you some of the stuff that we didn't have time to cover in the sermon and encourage you to dig in deeper as you study the text. So let's dive in and check out what's in the footnotes. Welcome to another episode of Footnotes. This week on Footnotes, we've got Paul Patterson.
I'm here.
Perfectly timed cough. There you go. Paul's here. Okay. Molly Patterson.
Hello.
Rob Croyle.
Yeah, I'm here too.
And myself, Logan Daly. And we are joined today by special guest, Kevin Shoemaker.
How's it going?
All-around expert in all things.
All-around expert in all things. Mm-hmm. Expert in saying no during the season of Lent. That's what he's doing.
He's saying
so
no
if you
want to
go, if you want
to
go hard in the paint,
join us today. And he said yes.
Yeah. So I don't know how that. How does that work?
You just have to pick your battles, I guess.
Okay. You just pick the battles. All right. Anyway,
we told Kevin that we're going to be talking politics today, and he's like, "I'm there."
All right. Yeah, he was sold on that. So we're going to start off with Paul's shortcomings.
Do do do
do do do.
Oh my god!
And that was his shortcoming.
That
for
was
the week.
The shortcoming for the week because we didn't catch anything else. That was like a spot on sermon. You should have a sinus infection more often,
dude. Sunday is still a blur to me.
It was great. Like
today is a blur to me.
It was a great sermon.
I just want to mention trying to work out, especially like cardio stuff with sinus infection. Yep. Is
Ouch.
Awful.
It's the worst. Yeah. You can't breathe.
No.
Well, not only can you not breathe, but like your heart rate increases and like whatever pressure you had is amplified.
Oh yeah.
And I'm still not recovered from this morning.
It was
Anyway.
I'm so glad that you get to go through this.
It's
and
it's
have this
not
experience.
Even right.
I had to convince my wife that I had a sinus infection. She didn't believe me at first.
Oh my gosh.
For everyone else who didn't catch that, it was actually the other way around. Somebody named Paul Patterson was really bullheaded and said he didn't have a sinus infection.
I've never had one before.
And Molly was like, no, that sounds like a sinus infection. He was like, no.
No.
Couldn't
he
be.
He still wouldn't believe me until Lori was like, yeah, you have a sinus infection. I'm like, I told you.
So the nurse says it. Now you believe it. Okay. Yeah.
Hey, Molly, by the way, I have a sinus infection.
Obnoxious man.
That's okay.
And...
I love you.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Anyway, that's enough of that. Let's dive right in. We got some great discussion today. We're going to start off talking. The first thing that you have told us we're talking about today, Paul, is a donkey.
Yeah. So
now in the story, there's a donkey.
Yeah. So Jesus comes to town and he's like, yo, disciples, go get me a donkey.
Yep. All right. So what are we talking? Tell me about that ass.
You cannot say that.
I'll edit that out.
When I'm taking a drink of water. And I'm holding my laptop in front of me.
Maybe I won't edit that out. That was great.
And I have a sinus infection.
That was like a neti pot.
Oh yeah,
that would have been great.
So tell me about the donkey.
Hold on, I'm still trying to get the water out of my sinus.
Too harsh.
I think I got a little ramen noodle up there too.
Oh.
Anyway, all right, so.
Pictures I didn't need.
So Jesus. Coming to Jerusalem, final week, heading to Passover week. This is the big week. This is the big deal. And he wants to make his big arrival and obviously make a big display of what's about to happen. And he's like, yo, go get me a donkey. Mm-hmm. Is that your first animal of your choice?
Probably not.
If you had to choose, Logan, I'm curious, what animal would you choose to ride into town?
A water buffalo?
Because everyone wants
needs a water buffalo. Buffalo.
Yeah, sure, there's water buffalo in Israel.
Mine would have been fast, for sure. Anyway.
Saying, Rob?
Oh, everybody wants
so I don't think they have water buffalo in Israel. Like, that's
no,
a little further south.
Yeah, they're definitely rare in Israel.
That's why I would want one. A llama. Ooh.
Or a breed between the two.
You can't actually ride llamas. They are a pack animal.
I'd figure it out.
Paul would put himself in a pack and then ride the llama.
They ride ostriches. I mean, you should be able to ride a llama.
You could ride anything.
Well, all right. So, donkey.
Anyway, so
not necessarily your first choice.
Yeah.
Maybe a noble steed. Shrek reference.
Shrek reference.
I'm a noble steed.
So he chooses a donkey for whatever reason. So the question we have to ask is why? And we did mention in the sermon that donkeys are not known as victorious animals. Mm-hmm. They're more of a peacetime animal. They're meant for labor. They're meant for maintenance. It's a horse that you would use during warfare. So sure. Jesus' choice already is different than what you would expect, because remember, Israel is currently being occupied by a foreign power. So why does he choose a donkey? There's a couple other passages, though, that are important to pull into mind when we read about this. One is Zechariah 9:9. And Zechariah, this specific section is talking about judgment against Israel and Israel's enemies and how there's a king coming to Zion.
Okay.
And Zion, by the way, is always a picture of God's holy mountain, specifically Jerusalem in this sense.
Okay.
And so Zechariah 9:9 says, "Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout aloud, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, your king is coming to you. Righteous and having salvation is he, humble and mounted on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey. I'll cut off the chariot from Ephraim, the war horse from Jerusalem." And you can already hear like some of the comparisons between like a horse and a donkey.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get rid of all war is the image here. And the battle bow shall be cut off, and he shall speak peace to the nations. His rule shall be from sea to sea and from the river to the ends of the earth. And so even in Zechariah in the Old Testament, you have this image of a king who's going to come not through warfare, but through peace. And that somehow his reign is not going to be one of oppression and not be one of subjecting all the nations, but one of peace instead. You also have a story in 2 Kings 9. This is about Jehu. And when Jehu becomes king, he comes into the city, and we read that the people in haste took their garments and put it under him on the bare steps, and they blew the trumpet and proclaimed Jehu as king. So this is always, so when Jesus comes into the city, this is not just like, this doesn't happen everywhere Jesus goes, which would be awkward, by the way.
Mm.
You know, every city Jesus ever entered, this is how they're treating him.
Would be a little awkward.
Get old really quickly. Like, shut up and leave me alone. But when Jesus comes to Jerusalem, at this specific instance, he intentionally picks a donkey. I don't think he's surprised that people are putting down palm branches in their coats so he could walk on them. And it's a picture of a king coming into his throne. He is about to ascend and claim the kingdom that is his.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't cover a lot of the donkey this week because we had some other things that we had to talk about, like America.
So there is another donkey passage.
Oh, yeah?
Genesis 22, verse 3. So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, which by implication somebody rode it. Mm-hmm. It took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac, and he cut the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him.
Which, according to tradition, is the same hill that Jesus was sacrificed on later.
Yeah.
There's also, Molly pointed this out, Balaam's ass. that's how I learned it in Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sunday school.
That's quite the story.
I don't remember what you're trying to get me to.
No, there's a Gentile guy.
Yeah, who is going to curse? He was coming to curse Israel because of some foreign nation wanted that, and through the process of going, the donkey ended up speaking to Balaam and like, why are you doing like?
Which there's that's something a little in strange. The path,
and so then Balaam had to end up blessing Israel instead of cursing.
Which I'm sure we can make work with Jesus' message.
I think it would actually tie in quite nicely.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in that story, Balaam makes probably the first prophecy about Jesus' star when he is born. I have seen his star, that is what he says. And there's a long rabbinic and historic tradition that the Messiah, whenever he was born, would be marked by a star. So
that's kind of fun.
Yeah, so... And this is just another example of how what everything Jesus does and says.
It's all tying together.
Yeah, he never does anything by accident. It's always layered, and it's like an onion.
Like an onion.
Another Shrek reference.
What about parfait?
What about cake? Cakes have layers. All right. One other thing. And since Josh isn't here, I'm going to bring this up. The Lamb Gate versus the Lion's Gate. You didn't really talk about this on Sunday at all.
No. And I'll just, I kind of know where you're going with it.
Sure. You referenced that Caesar might have been coming in.
Yes. One, we're not 100% sure which gates they used.
Sure.
There's been with Jesus's entrance into the city, I've read two different places. There's the East Gate and it's like the northeastern entrance.
Okay.
I forget. And the same is true for the west side of the city. So that's why I didn't spend time on it, because if I can't 100% believe in something, I
can't say something. Like, it is a little bit of speculation, yeah. But the whole, I really like the imagery of Caesar coming in from one side.
To be clear, Caesar.
Or not Caesar. Yeah.
Whoever the pontificate was.
Yeah, it'd be Pontius Pilate then. Pilate,
during the time of Jesus, yes.
Yeah, so Pilate, not Caesar. But Caesar's people. Mm-hmm. Rome coming in through one gate. Especially if it's the Lion's Gate, known as the Lion's Gate. This is the powerful, like, grand gate. And then Jesus comes in on the opposite side, riding in on a donkey.
And he could have come through the Lamb.
Could have come through the Lamb's Gate, which, yeah. Oh, man. I mean, that's just got some beautiful... You know, that speaks to my artistic soul. Well, the imagery there. Like, hot dang.
Well, and that works really well biblically, because you get to Revelation.
Mm-hmm.
And you read about this king... who is going to conquer the nations, and everyone's going to follow him. And John looks, and what does he see?
The lion laying with the lamb?
No, he sees a lamb as it was slaughtered.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Like, so this is the king that's going to conquer all the nations, a dead lamb?
Yep.
This is what it looks like? And John does this several times in the book of Revelation. Mm-hmm. Like, he talks about the nation of Israel and making up the troops of this army. And when John looks to see the nations of the nation of Israel and its army, what does he see? He sees people from every tribe and language and nation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's this, probably more so than any other book in Revelation, there's this intentionality behind what we think we should see and what actually is. And John does this so well in the book of Revelation. It's like he had help. And then there's another story in the book of Revelation about Jesus who's covered in blood. And it's during all this warfare with the world. And you're like, oh, it must be the blood of the blood of his enemies. And actually you find out it's his own blood.
Sure.
Like, how does King Jesus conquer the world? It's not through being a lion and tearing people apart.
It's through being a scapegoat.
Oh, don't do that to me.
Oh, I did that. Anyway,
let's be honest. Everything comes back to that,
because you know.
No, it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
We're gonna have a sermon series on atonement theory one day.
I know.
Keep going on like this.
I know. It might actually work as a sermon series. I'll bet the youth will love it.
Oh yeah.
All right. So that's probably enough about that. Let's dig into the meat of the matter here. We wanted to talk politics.
Yeah, because this sermon has some implications with politics.
It does. It really applies to, we should be wrestling with, how do we apply this to what we practice within our political system as Christians?
And we don't need to rehash the whole sermon, but in a nutshell, Jesus is coming to a city that is politically torn apart.
Sure.
They don't have their freedom. They are being controlled by an outside government who's oppressive and cruel. Has a completely different value system than they. They don't, like, they're able to worship, but within certain.
So there's completely different value systems.
Different and value. Yep.
A lot of the people feel like they're oppressed by the other ones who are in power.
Totally.
Okay. Yeah, that doesn't sound like today at all.
And by the way, we'll talk about it in this next sermon. But the Jews had differing views about how to approach this, and so had different. We can call them parties, I guess.
Mm.
And how they're supposed to engage the world and engage with the current political system. And Jesus comes in and he kind of throws them all under the bus and says, nope, you're all wrong. And so obviously, we as Christian Americans don't struggle with politics, and we don't have any bad ideas about what makes a nation great.
We never fight over these things.
No.
There's no division. Everybody's all unified.
So, and this is one of the reasons we have Kevin here. And there is a place to engage in politics, and I believe it's a high calling. I believe it's a good calling. At the same time, however, what often happens, in my humble opinion, is that Christians make politics the goal. Like, that is the end game for them. And so that's the discussion we need to have, is where do we live as God's people in a land? There's even the bigger conversation about what is a godly nation that I kind of tried to dance around Sunday.
Sure.
Because tell someone who's been a devout Christian and a proud American for the entirety of their life that there is no such thing as a godly nation or as a Christian nation, and like that.
It's going to raise some heckles.
It's going to raise some heckles, yes.
That even for me, like, that's still, like, that still bugs me a little bit.
Yeah?
And I agree with you, but at the same time, like, there's part of, in the back of my head, where it's like, no! America! Christian nation! God's country!
So where does that come from for you?
Oh, that's totally, like, just the climate that I was raised in, Southern Idaho, pretty conservative, fairly Christian, like... That's where that comes from. And if you grow up around that, if you are constantly, this is what people buy into, this is the narrative that is told, then yeah, you're going to have that deep programmed into your psyche for sure. I do.
So when you think back on that, what was the reasoning? What justified that belief in your head?
Oh, what justified the belief? I mean, there definitely is a lot of like Christian principles and stuff like that are built into our nation.
Sure.
And you learned growing up the history and stuff like that with the, you know, like the escaping religious persecution over in England to come plant on the Mayflower and all that, which there's a deeper story there.
Yeah. Who are they fleeing from, by the way?
The Christian church.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, like, but there's deeper stories there that you don't necessarily get into if you don't get past the surface level stuff. But that narrative is definitely spun.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember in Awana we would do the Christian flag. I don't even remember the whole thing, and then the Pledge of Allegiance. Like, I remember doing that in Awana.
Yeah, I'm sure. We tie our Christianity and our patriotism. Very often we tie the two together very closely.
Yeah, for me it was the only conversation. Like there were not other conversations going on about our country, about our history, about how there were a lot of things that we weren't handling well throughout our history. Slavery. I mean, they determined that blacks were...
Three quarters
human, or something like that, you know, sure. So they to get away from liberty for all.
Sure.
You know.
Which, I mean, but there's... And there's still, like, you can still make the case that we were still on the forefront of that.
Absolutely. You know,
and every nation... We're a very young nation comparatively. Mm. Mm-hmm. So you compare us to most of the rest of the world, we haven't been around that long.
No.
So we're going to have ups and downs, and we're going to have times where we don't handle things well. And, but I think that when the church takes this stance of like, oh yeah, no, we're a Christian nation. And then you just kind of leave that there. I think that leaves us in very dangerous waters. Mm-hmm. That's just my two cents on that one.
So, hypothetical situation here.
Sure.
Should a church ever have a flagpole in its front yard with the American flag above the Christian flag?
Oh. Oh, snap.
I want to say no.
Yeah.
But I also, like, my other side's like, I don't want to offend anyone. Like, because I do know that there are people who think that, like, those two are so closely connected. And isn't there something that says that there can't be anything higher than the American flag?
I believe there are flag rules that say that, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a Christian flag.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's been mentioned twice
it's
now.
White.
What?
With a little blue square and a red cross over the blue square.
Yeah.
Why do what?
Where have you been?
Southern Idaho.
Well, but I grew up in Southern Idaho too. So
I know nothing of this.
No.
Okay.
So
is it a denominational thing?
No.
No.
I don't think so.
No.
Really?
Because like Awana is a Baptist ministry, but several churches. Have Awana that aren't Baptist.
Yeah, but I think it is tied more to denominationalism. Like, we never had a Christian flag
in the churches I grew up in. So just as an example, my wife and I grew up in a Christian Missionary Alliance church, not a Baptist church, and they had an American flag.
Right, I'm just saying that the denominations would have a tendency to hold to those traditions more so than maybe non-denominational churches.
Hmm.
As far as the flag and those kinds of things.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah.
But like, so going back to the original question that I asked, the reason I posit that way is because that, I think that example really.
No, it does.
It exemplifies this tension.
Sure.
Is anything above God in our loyalty that we're called to God?
Well, first off, I didn't know there was a Christian flag, so I didn't know that could be a thing. I would put two flagpoles up and have them both if you're going to do flags, I guess.
Yeah, you're trying to find the loophole.
Like
I would do neither.
Or, yeah. Or I just wouldn't put up the Christian flag. What is that?
So,
like, whatever. If you want to have an American flag, fine, but whatever.
It's a white field, which represents the purity of Jesus. And then the blue is to represent the baptism. And then the red is to represent his blood.
Huh. Interesting. So it's also red, white, and blue?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sure that was accidental.
It's mostly white, though. Mm. Like, this is the flag. It's mostly white.
Anyway, I bring up the question because, like, as Christians, where does our identity lie? Does our identity lie first and foremost in America or first and foremost in being God's people?
Sure.
And I think, and I know how we would answer that question. Well, God's people.
But if China suddenly called in all their debts and all of a sudden we're owned by China, how are we all going to handle that?
Sure. Or if you live in, we don't have to go that far. Let's say you live in China.
Sure.
Or North Korea. Would your church, the small group of people that you meet with in private, would your church be known for having a North Korean flag on its behind its pulpit?
Ooh. It's tricky business right there.
It is tricky business.
Yeah, and to be clear, I love my country.
Oh, yeah.
And I served it, you know, 20 years. Well, 19 years, 364 days, but who's counting?
Yeah, and thank you for your service. By the way, I was at Walmart last night, and there's a big old dog, service animal.
Hmm.
Guy that was part of the Air Force.
Oh, I was like, service animal, yeah. Rob. I was like, where are we going here?
No, but him and I had a conversation in the middle of Walmart while I pet Sam, was the dog's name. Big old Newfoundland.
Huge, oh, there you go.
Huge dog.
So let's anyway, zoom.
Let's go back to Rob.
Yeah,
off.
Sorry.
So, yeah, love my country. Love some of the guiding principles that formed the country in the first place. Mm-hmm. And recognize that there's things that we need to own as a country. And it's my Christian faith that tells me that there's some things that we need to own in the way we've treated people, the way we've treated indigenous people, the way we've treated people of color. There's a number of issues where we haven't always been on the right side of things when it's come to some of the wars that we fought, why we fought them. How we fought them. There's some things that we need to own.
Sure.
And I don't think anyone would ever confess that America's perfect and has always been perfect. But I feel like having this discussion sometimes with Christians who are devoutly patriotic, like
it can become
you're walking into a a battleground that you're not going to escape without black eyes. And
yeah, it's very hard to have that conversation.
Yeah.
We should zoom back in to kind of the original concept, because we were like, well, let's not talk about the Christian nation, but then we talked about the Christian nation. Sure. Well, let's zoom back in. Like, where does that, like, the parties and having that discussion and wrestling with our, like, participating in the political system as Christians, what does that look like? And this is, I really want to hear what Kevin has to say on this stuff. Because this is, like, this is your wheelhouse.
Yeah. Kevin's obviously the expert, so Kevin, go ahead and talk the last.
I think the biggest problem is that you cannot mix politics and the church. It's historically been a disaster. Being a huge Dietrich Bonhoeffer fan, the German church during World War II was probably one of the most strongest religious identities in the world. And it was obviously leading differently than what a true church should be led as, but they took up the identity of, you know, almost what America is doing now. It's America first. It was the Führer first. It was Germany first. And until somebody came out and said, that's not the Christian way, you know what World War II turned into, what a disaster that was. We're not far from that. When I grew up, and I grew up Catholic, we didn't even talk about politics in church. It didn't even come up when we got together as people after service, when we got together at functions. It was not a big deal. But now, all of a sudden, if you are either liberal, then you're going to an evangelical church, or if you're right, then you're part of the established church. So we've already decided that politics and church are dividing us. So in all reality, do we talk about politics and church? Do we? Because I've been in churches where they've literally stood up and endorsed candidates, and that's not what church is. We're supposed to be endorsing, you know, one rule and one rule only. And that is love our neighbor as ourself. That's rule one. And that does not come up in politics at all. Matter of fact, here in Montana, one of the biggest divisions is over Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. And I was in Helena Saturday listening to both sides of the field. And in all reality, the only thing it made me want to do is just cancel Medicaid, period. Because it's basically two political parties using the liberal side using children and, disability people to get something that they want. The right side is saying it's bankrupting the state of Montana. So, you know, where do you stand? Well, in all reality, as a church, there should be nobody on Medicaid. As a church, we should be the ones who are standing up and saying, we're going to take care of the orphans. We're going to take care of the disability. We don't need politicians to do our job. We don't need to decide that, we need to spend more money on taxes to help out, you know, Medicaid expansion, or we need to pull back and not help these people out because people are taking advantage, whatever the argument is. I just see that the church has gotten so far away from the principles of what Christ came to that, and then we start blaming it on the politicians. It's the politicians who are screwing everything up, when in all reality, it is the church who has not been able to stand up and do what Christ told him to do before he left.
I think Kevin feels passionate about this.
Just a little bit. This is why I was excited about that.
Let me rephrase something and tell me if I'm right about what you just said. Kevin, I don't think you're advocating that we get rid of Medicaid and Medicare, right?
No. I mean, there's advantages to it and there's disadvantages to it. The problem is when they brought out the expansion, I'll just give a real scenario, is they were originally told, you know, how many people would be on it, how much it's going to cost. Well, once they brought it out, everybody got on board, and now it is literally, you know, could bankrupt the state of Montana.
Sure.
And where do we start drawing that line? How does the other 90% of Montana feel about funding the 10%? So, you know, we're back to that whole kind of reversal type of a thing of what we're doing. But in all reality, that's not what we're...
Well, and part of the problem with America today is, like, should we take care of kids or people who, for whatever reason, they're just not in a position that they can take care of their medical needs? Well, absolutely. But should we also be fiscally, financially responsible? Absolutely. But then what happens is you get a party who picks one side and the other party picks the other side, and now you just, you have a fight. And, yeah. So you obviously are active in politics.
Yes, I've worked several different political candidates working on their campaign.
Yeah.
Been involved with Missoula Energy Fifth Collaborative. I was on their team that in the last legislative session, we were out there almost weekly working with legislature and stuff. And I've got, you know, several friends who are working on actually both sides, in Democratic and Republican side. So
if you had to identify where you are on the political spectrum, where would you put yourself?
Center right.
Logan, I'm curious.
I tend to lean more libertarian and more on the right side.
Okay. Rob?
Almost dead center.
Ollie?
I don't know.
I'm probably with Logan. I'm more libertarian. You can edit this out if you want to, but I know you voted for Trump.
Yeah.
Logan.
Yeah.
And I definitely didn't.
No. You didn't.
But we're still good friends.
Yeah. Well, and that, I mean, I didn't love, let's be honest, I didn't vote for him in the primary.
Who did you vote for?
I voted for Ben Carson.
Oh, Carson.
I liked Carson, and I did like Cruz for a little bit there. I thought he would have been a decent candidate in the primaries, but the primaries were a hot mess. But I really like Carson because he cares about people.
Sure.
And he worked his way up, and like, I don't know. People are mean to him now that he's doing the housing development thing or whatever, but yeah. I still think he's a good dude. Yeah. And he had a beard. He had a goatee. He was the only candidate that had facial hair. So let's be honest. Let's make America beard again. Like, if Hillary had a bigger beard than Trump, I might have. No, I wouldn't have. But no. So like that was a tough election. I didn't love that. But
at the same time, you have really good friends, people that you are close to that you died for, who probably dislike Trump a little bit.
Oh, yeah, no, we talked about this, was it 2 weeks ago on Footnotes or whatever, but like vehemently, I got some friends that are like, they loathe the concept of Trump being president, and like, they're already gearing up for Sanders 2020 or whatever.
They probably watch Stephen Colbert every night.
Oh yeah. Like yeah. I got friends across the spectrum, and the ability to have that conversation and wrestle with like, how do you handle Syrian refugees, or how do you handle border security as a Christian? Because yeah, we should be welcoming people in and taking care of people, but we all land. Yes, we should be taking care of people, and the differences occur when we try to figure out what's the best way to do that. And I think part of the issue today is we demonize the other side. Mm-hmm. So like, let's say hypothetically, Paul, you and I disagree on, I don't know, the border wall or something. And we both agree that yes, we should be taking care of people, but how to take care of people is where we're falling on different sides. And so instead of saying, understanding that yes, we are just trying to figure out the best solution, I'm going to instead demonize you. Mm-hmm. And say, well, he just doesn't care.
This is the box all over again.
Oh, yeah. No, it is the box. We put entire groups of people in the box. And instead of understanding and trying to empathize as we should as Christians, mm-hmm. and understanding where they're coming from and what's driving these people, we just put them and say, nope, you're the enemy. And everything you say has to be wrong because I have to be right. You know, and that I think that creates so much, like, we can't get anywhere in politics, and this is why people are all frustrated now.
Yeah, whenever we demonize somebody, whenever we objectify them, put them in the box, there's nothing we can learn from them. And that's just not the reality. The reality is everybody has something to bring to the table. And we see that with Jesus Christ. Like, he brings everybody together. He's not trying to push anybody out. He's trying to bring everybody together. And I think we're going to see that in this week's sermon.
And the following week's sermon.
And the following sermon. And the
sermon after that.
Because it might just be the message of Jesus, and maybe, just maybe, the person on the other side of the aisle has something valuable to bring to the conversation. And if we allow those voices in, we can actually do some real good.
So as a Christian, when it comes to politics, I think there's a few healthy approaches. And I think one is fighting for life. Like, where life is a deal. We we pick that side. And I know some people are going to instantly go to the abortion issue, and I would agree with that.
It's on the forefront of people's minds.
I think when we talk about kids who are being abandoned or are being isolated from their parents because of the border, I think we fight for the kids. How that looks like, what that looks like with immigration, that's a big discussion. I don't know what that looks like. But
those are big problems.
But we fight for life. I think that's a very biblical approach. What does life look like? How do we fight for that in politics? I think another thing, too, is sometimes we just don't engage as far as in the whole political theater that is.
Oh, sure.
Part of our resistance as God's people is when there is the show, when there is the drama,
we're not
going to be part of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not going to be part of the unhealthy meme-based misinformation, whatever word you want to throw in there. Like, we're not going to be part of that culture.
Sure.
And so part of our resistance is the refusal to engage in an unhealthy political climate. And I think thirdly, the other way we rebel is if I'm on the Republican side of the spectrum, I'm going to purposely find Democrats. And I'm like, you and I are going to be best friends. And we're going to hang out. And I'm going to get to know you and why you value and why you think the way you think. And and you're going to like me.
Yeah. I need those people to push back on my ideas to make sure, like you brought up earlier, Kevin, with Germany. Like, nobody was pushing back. Mm-hmm. Nobody was pushing back on these sides. And if nobody pushes back, you go way too far. The pendulum swings and nobody's pulling on it. Bad things happen.
Yep.
And that's going to happen on either side.
Yep.
Like, it happened in nationalistic Germany. It happened in socialistic Russia. Like,
Venezuela today.
Yeah, Venezuela. Like, people get trampled on when we don't. We swing too far to either side. So to sit in the middle there.
And two horrific attacks within a week, you know, one in New Zealand, the other one in the Philippines, I believe. And whether it's a mosque or a Catholic church, people's lives were lost. And that is not how God's kingdom moves forward.
Yeah.
I think to wrap up, Paul, when he writes his epistle to the city of Philippi, City of Philippi was basically a veteran community. It was where a bunch of war vets retired, and City of Philippi was given honorary Roman status. Mm. Very proud city.
Sure.
You can just imagine, like, if you had a city of 50,000 people and every single one of them were
Marines. That
family. Yeah. You can imagine, like, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No.
To this city, however, Paul talks about multiple times what it looks like to be a good... In the Greek, what does it look like to be a good politician? And then he has this one phrase talking to the city of Philippi. We are not citizens of this world. We are citizens of heaven. Like, at the end of the day, our loyalty is not to a nation. It's not to a political ideology. Mm-hmm. And I think what we have to be very cautious with as Christians is sometimes we want to mix God's agenda with our own. And I would rather risk, if I had to err on one side of things, I would rather err on, I'm trying to figure out how to word this. Let me say it this way. I never want to call something God's agenda unless I'm absolutely convinced of it. Because sure. I don't want to put words in God's mouth.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's my closing thoughts.
No, that's good.
Anyone want to jump in?
No, if I can, I want to bring up, because you brought up the wall.
Oh, sure.
Which has been a big political debate.
Has it been?
Also become a big Christian debate. The far extreme right of me basically says, well, there's two things that are being caused by not having the wall or having the wall. And the two things they're talking about is naturally drugs coming over and sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. Well, if we have, as a Christian nation, actually raise good Christian fathers, good Christian mothers, there would be no drugs because there wouldn't be doing drugs. So the drugs wouldn't be coming in. So we need to start stepping up and saying, hey, you know, we don't have to do the whole drugs are bad type of thing, but we just mean to make sure that as a Christian value that our, even if they're non-Christian, our brothers sure. and sisters are not turning towards that way. Because if there was nobody taking drugs, mm-hmm. there'd be no drug trade coming over. Same thing as raising, you know, biblical fathers. If they weren't paying for prostitutes and young kids and that kind of thing, there would be no, there would be, there's, if there's no demand, they're not sure. just going to bring them over. They're not going to bring over, you know, 200 pounds of cocaine and say, here, we're going to sell it and nobody's going to pick it up. They're not going to take that, if there's no money being exchanged, if there's no trade. So that's my thing on the wall. You know,
we wouldn't have to
yeah. build the wall if we as a nation stood up and said, no, you don't prostitute kids. You don't buy drugs. We wouldn't even be having this debate.
Politics always follows culture.
Right.
Sure.
Like if you want to change the world, you change the culture. You don't change the politics.
Right. And I guess that's what I'm trying to get at is that's why church cannot get involved or should not be involved in politics.
Yeah. There was a famous Nazi leader who got on board early with Hitler, and he was quoted as saying, "If you can have your politics, give me the art, and I'll change the world."
Yeah.
Like you want to change the world, you change its culture. And I think as God's people, that's really where we're called to engage, not mm-hmm. politics, but culture.
Mm.
Now, if you're politically active, Kevin obviously is so. And once again, I think that's fine.
There's nothing wrong with that. No. But
we're called to go out into the world
sure.
and make a difference.
But even for Kevin, like his primary goal should be to change culture. And I think politics can be a tool for that, can be part of that. But yeah. We probably should be done. We're gonna be talking about this pretty much every week.
It'll be good. Yeah, I'm not gonna get on the culture soapbox because I really wanted to there, but no. We'll save it. It'll be fine. No, that's good stuff. As always, hit us up at info@missionridge.church.
Any complaints go to
gus@liferotp.com. And we'll see you next time on Footnotes. Have a great week.
Peace.
Bye. Oh.
You've been listening to Footnotes on the Mission Ridge podcast. For more information about Mission Ridge, please visit our website at missionridge.church. Thanks for tuning in. We hope the rest of your week is straight up #blessed, and that you'll join us again next week for more Footnotes.